So this is an interview with Teresa Kelly, Associate General Counsel, Office of General Counsel at Michigan State University on March the 6th, 2020, with questions focusing on her relationship with the operations and other dimensions of the faculty grievance procedure. So you have the questions, and we'll just simply roll through them. They don't have to be long in the way of answers and so on. We do like to get a bit of background on people, education, appointment dates, when you came to the university, and so on.
Okay.
As number one.
Okay. I was hired by the university in February of 2000. I was hired as an assistant general counsel. I believe I was promoted to associate general counsel in 2007, but I may be off by a year or so. Other background, I obtained a Bachelor of Science degree from Michigan State University in 1985. I received a law degree from the University of Houston in 1990. After I graduated from law school, I clerked for the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals and then worked for a private law firm in Houston up until the time I took this job for the university in 2000.
So I never connected you with MSU background. I always thought you were a Texan. You say, in
terms of I grew up in northern Michigan, I am a Michigander for sure.
Okay, well, that's great. That's useful information. The second question is a general one. What is the role of the University General Counsel in faculty grievance matters? And it's really your role, not in general. And what I'm really interested in is a break between your current role, which I may be incorrect, but you're the kind of primary contact now. But there was some period of time when you were in the office that you weren't in that role. I mean, I worked largely with Christine
yes.
Zacho. And so I wondered if you could comment initially to what extent over the years prior to this major contact point role, did you have any relationship with the FGO or with the faculty grievance procedure and so on?
Yeah, so obviously I've been at the university for a long time, but I guess prior to summer of 2018, I had a very limited role with respect to the faculty grievance policy and the faculty grievance office. I can't even remember. Occasionally I might have assisted a unit administrator with a grievance. I might have attended one grievance hearing on behalf of a unit administrator because the grievant had an
outside
attorney.
Canvas, right.
I don't even remember those situations, to be honest, though. Can't really comment on them.
I recall historically from time to time, I recall relations with University Committee on Faculty Affairs and Chain that Mike Kiley was involved. You were largely in litigation in terms of your major role.
Yeah, that's true. I was hired as a litigator, and I did that probably for the first 10 years or so at the university primarily. Now I don't do any litigation. My role has changed quite a bit over the years. I work on a variety of matters, and most recently, like I said, since summer of 2018, one of my roles is to work on with the FGO on several things, I guess.
Okay. So number three really brings me to 2018 and beyond. And so the question is, what is your major role in relationship with the FGP and the FGO? And I've listed a variety of roles
yes.
that one could play, and I'm not sure you play any or all of these, but if you could talk a bit about what your role and relationship is.
Again, I mean, I've had limited interactions with the faculty grievance office. So my role has been, the majority of my role has been to assist unit administrators in responding to grievances at the, I would say, at the jurisdictional level. I have handled quite a few responses on behalf of unit administrators. outlining how there might not be jurisdiction for the grievance to move forward. I have not attended any grievance hearings since summer of 2018, and I have given the FGO advice with respect to issues that have come up when he has needed it since summer of 2018.
Now, your link has been with Chico largely, not before.
Yes, I may not have this exactly right, but there may have been a gap in FGOs where, who is the primary assistant for Chico? I forget. Maureen, is her name Maureen?
Maureen is the administrative assistant.
So I think for some time I fielded some questions directly for Maureen.
Yeah, well, she was in charge of records and procedural matters.
She's very good and familiar with the process and the policy. So, yeah, but I can't remember working specifically with any FGO before Chico.
Okay. So in looking at this list under two, you've talked about representing a university administrator. You didn't comment on drafts of correspondence between the FGO and either party on the or to draft on reports on jurisdiction.
I have not. Yeah. I really can't remember any drafts that I've commented on.
Okay.
He's never asked me to comment on a draft.
All right. The question at the end is, have you ever rendered advice to the president who would play a role on the grievance appeals or on other FGO matters?
No, not the president and not the office of the provost or associate provost. No.
Now, historically in my time, Bob Nodo was the consigliere to the president. He looked at all the drafts and he wrote responses and she rewrote many of them.
Probably, that's true.
Yeah. But he was very much involved in all of that. And Christine was the unit administrator and then was involved in a major review in the early 2000s of revising the grievance procedure. And she worked with Donna Ziske and John Rivette, and the three of them really spent a lot of time.
That sounds vaguely familiar. Yeah. I remember her doing that.
Yeah, the history that surrounds that is that there were a bunch of interpretations by the FGO and by the University Committee on Faculty Affairs that ended up in a long list in this user's manual. And you had to sort of read the procedure, so they incorporated a lot of them to be a regular part of the procedure. Oh, I think that's good. This may jump ahead on an issue, but Chico mentioned it on the question, is the practice that when a grievant has an MSU counsel, in other words, someone who's a faculty member, and there was some discussion about whether MSU Law College, was it really part of the university or not, and should they be viewed as internal or external? But there are probably 200 members of the general faculty who have law degrees, and some of them are involved in this. So that the role would be that you would not play a role representing an administrator if the external or the counsel was drawn internally.
I think that's right.
But the other mode is if a grievant, in a rare number of cases, I think, engaged an outside attorney, then you would represent the administrator.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's right. I mean, I would get involved when the grievant had retained somebody to act as their lawyer. Many of these university faculty members or whatever have law degrees, but it's not their role to
It's act a supplementary
as an attorney.
Activity. Right. Now, there was another matter that Chico raised. He said that you had some concern about some instances in which unit administrators went and engaged their own attorneys to represent them, and so you have a kind of personal role and an administrative role.
Yeah.
And there's some discussion whether we should be clear that if you confront an external counsel an attorney, representing a grievant, then the university represents the administrator.
Or another way is to limit, you know, that attorney's involvement on behalf of the unit administrator. That was a really peculiar case. I don't know if that's ever come up before, where a unit administrator went outside of the university and obtained his own counsel. And actually, just jumping ahead a bit, I think that is one of the strengths that I would comment about Chico. He handled that situation really well. I mean, he first came to our office and said, I'm really concerned about this. So he had the insight that this could go really bad, and it was not really a fair thing for the grievant to have to undergo without a lawyer while the unit administrator had outside counsel.
Right.
So he had managed the situation in a way I thought was really good. He did not permit the outside lawyer for the unit administrator to have voice.
Yeah.
He could sit there, or she could sit there, I don't remember, and advise the unit administrator, but he wasn't going to, you know, really actively have a voice on behalf of the unit administrator. Yeah. And he pulled that off, and I think it went well.
Yeah.
So that's another possible way to resolve the situation, is how he did it.
So does there need to be some guidance to people?
I think there could be clarity.
Operating rule?
Absolutely. I think we could use some clarity on that. Because, you know, that would not be fair for the grievant to have to go outside and obtain a lawyer. And I don't think our office is comfortable in that situation, providing. It just puts the university in an awkward situation to advise the grievant or to represent the grievant in a matter that's really against the university, because the unit administrator is acting on behalf of the university. So I don't think it's something that our office could step in and help the grievant with.
Yeah.
It's an odd situation, and it rarely happens. So whether it needs to be considered in a policy revision, I don't know.
Yeah, but there should be an operating perception.
Yeah, we should have a practice in place for when this does rarely come up.
Makes reasonable sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you may have answered question 4 already, but relationship between the provost, associate provost for academic human resources on any matters, not necessarily particular grievances, but on elements of how the procedure works and operates and so on.
I have basically stepped into Christine's old role with respect to advising academic HR and the Office of the Associate Provost, Office of the Provost. So I work with them a great deal, but we really haven't had any, at least since, you know, the last year and a half, 2 years, whatever. Uh-huh. We haven't had any. Really, I haven't really had any need to advise them on FGO matters.
Okay. Well, that's, I think, straightforward. So, rolling right along.
I told you this wouldn't take long.
That's good. Number 5 is to comment on strengths and weaknesses of various FGOs with whom you've interacted, and I assume that's with the one FGO you've interacted. On knowledge of policy, accessibility, administration, or other matters.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's been limited. My advice has been limited, but I think so far so good. I think Chico's done a good job, and I called out the one time where I thought he handled a particularly sticky situation quite well. He seems to work very well independently. Doesn't need a lot of help from our office or any other office that I can tell. And, that's basically it.
Yeah, good. There is one issue that you may have some comment on. My sense is, and I don't know whether that is an interaction that he had from the beginning, sort of finding his way with the rules, the policies, and procedures. But the notion that, there are really two steps to the grievance process. One, as you mentioned earlier, is the jurisdiction, and there are the 7 infamous principles. One is that you've got to identify a policy that has been, you allege it's been violated, and the other is there's a practice that is defined in the that has been alleged. And then do you have to file on a timely basis, and do you have to identify the right amenities? These are more procedural questions. My sense is that early on, Chico believed that if the question arose that the matter was addressed in the procedure in the unit or the college, for example, if you were up for a promotion and tenure review, if they followed the rules and there was a committee deliberation and there was a request for external letters or whatever the process is, if that was followed, then he would argue there was no jurisdiction. I think there is some history that says while you can need the procedural questions to get through the door, once you're in the door, you can allege that there have been improper application or there's been unfair treatment in terms of the process. And I think he struggled a bit to sort out the differences between that.
I think there's still a struggle, to be honest. And I think, I mean, this jumps ahead as well, but that's one place, I think, where the policy could be improved upon. And that is, there's the jurisdictional piece that provides that the grievant must state a reasonably adequate statement of facts.
Yeah.
And what exactly that means, I don't know. So recently, yeah, I think that's correct. I think the Faculty Grievance Office, or the FGO, has been saying you haven't provided a reasonably adequate statement of facts to support your allegation. Therefore, there's no jurisdiction. In the legal world, that's not really a jurisdictional issue. That's more like summary judgment. Like, even if we look at what you've said, you're still not going to win. And I'm not, I like that statement is in there, because then it really, we don't have to go through a grievance hearing when we know that your facts don't support the allegation.
Yeah.
When we can assess your facts and say the grievance should move to a hearing, we should do that. I'm just not sure I would call it a jurisdictional issue.
Yeah, no, I understand.
There might
be
another piece that we can move, piece in the process
the
that
other,
we can move that
the
to.
The other related question in terms of that particular issue, which I have a sense uncertainty on Chico's part from the start, is that if he issued a judgment, for example, the one that says you haven't set forth with clarity the reasons why you want to file a grievance, the grievant can appeal that to an ad hoc convened appeal panel whose judgment is final and binding.
Yes.
So if they say to the FGO, you're wrong, then you have to proceed to the grievance. If
right.
you say yes, then the grievant is told, no, that you've not met this requirement.
Right.
And I think there was some ambiguity in terms of the role of the appeals body.
Yeah, I've not encountered that with him at all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we have not discussed that, and I haven't really witnessed that. So I can't speak
there's
to
a
that.
There's a lot of trade on appeals to initial responses by the FGO. We looked at reports over a number of years, and there are 1,000 appeals.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I have not worked on any appeal. Well, yes, that's true. I have written appeals for the unit administrator. So,
right.
But I haven't really, yeah.
But of the 1,000 in broad terms, only 150 did the appeals panel find against the judgment of the FGO.
Huh? Wow, that's a low percentage.
A low percentage.
Yeah.
But it operated, and people have worked things through in a variety of ways.
Interesting.
Yeah, good. Okay. All right. So how would you articulate that question in terms, you said you still think there's some unclarity in terms of we're going to get into this in terms of the...
Yeah.
Possible changes and clarifications.
I think we should still be able to decide the grievance on the merits, but I'm not sure. I think I would move that. I would develop another, perhaps, hate to make the policy more complicated, but make move that reasonably adequate statement of facts, I would develop that a little bit more and move it to a different procedure in the policy where the FGO can determine that on the merits, the facts that you have stated do not support the grievance moving forward. And I think it should be, you know, it should be subject to appeal. So I don't think it's a major change. It would just be, you know, tweaking the policy somewhat. Because, you know, what's happening is on this reasonably adequate statement of facts provision, he's really deciding the case on the merits.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really, and it's supposed to be just a jurisdictional issue at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that just could be, like I said, tweaked a bit. But I'm certainly not advocating that everything goes to a grievance hearing. You know, I think there needs to be some summary disposition of a grievance when it's called for.
Yeah, I think historically the concern, you know, way back when people devised this, they wanted to be able to deal with a situation in which the person says, well, I've just been treated unfairly, and it's sort of an amorphous
yes.
sort of response. And they would say, well, that's not
a reasonably adequate. Yep.
But that you really have to lay out all the issues that are involved
yeah.
at the front end to be able to get it. Okay,
yeah.
That's good. All right, that's very helpful. You, in fact, have addressed six along the way, which
yeah.
is a couple of cases in which the FGP performed well or did not perform
mm-hmm.
well based on your understanding of the FGP's goals and objectives.
Yeah, I don't think I have anything to add.
Except those that you
yeah,
mentioned.
Yeah, I think that's really it.
Okay. Improvements, you've talked a little bit
yeah,
about
I
that,
don't
but,
think I have
but are there any
yeah.
others in
no.
terms of the clarification?
I mean, just in my experience, I think if I study the policy, I might add some more, but I, to be honest, I haven't done that in advance of this interview, and it hasn't come up in me working with the, you know,
yeah.
the FGO.
There's been a tradition which I think Chico is moving to a more balanced perspective, which is different when Bill Donahue was the FGO, who was not the immediate predecessor because John Bell was a responsible administrator who filled in because Donahue left the position. But Donahue was a student of the mediation process, and he really tried to push much more vigorously in a formal way that matters should go to mediation. In fact, the office had funds provided to recruit outside mediators.
Yes.
And that still goes on to a certain degree now.
I actually encountered that situation on a recent dismissal for cause case that I handled. Part
uh-huh.
of the evidence was this mediation that Bill Donahue was trying to get the faculty member who was eventually dismissed
yeah.
to engage in. And
yeah.
So I saw that he had offered this outside mediator, and they were going to pay for this outside mediator to come help mediate this case, and I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, there was a policy developed in 2017, which is called mediation, and it's curious because there was a previous procedure, because one of the issues that has to do with the faculty grievance procedure, it doesn't deal with disputes between faculty and faculty and faculty and staff.
Right.
And when I was in the provost office, there was an interest to try to explore ways, because a lot of universities had these procedures. And it worked moderately well and ran for about 13 years. There was just no business because it required both parties to agree to participate. But the new mediation policy requires that when the parties agree to a mediation, the administrative unit, that's the unit in which the grievance
mm-hmm.
has been developed, has to pay for it. So there are two interesting questions. Is one, is that factor really going to persuade the administrator never to agree because they've got to stick their hand in their pocket and pay for it? And then the question is there some conflict of interest if the unit administrator who's being grieved against is providing financial support to the mediator?
I think the grievant would see it as a conflict for sure. And I think that's, in fact, what happened in this case.
Yeah.
He's like, well, this particular faculty member said, I have no interest in mediating with a mediator that's selected by the university, not just the unit administrator, but the university as a whole. He just refused to engage in the process.
Now, we've chatted with Chico a couple of times fairly recently. He said there were five cases, and he said, from his perspective, four worked quite well. One, the parties simply couldn't agree, and there didn't seem to be any major administrative response to having to pay for it. But I think, relatedly, he's been pursuing the regular process in terms of informal interchange to try to resolve issues, and then hearings as needed. Something like, you know, we've looked at all this data, something like 80% of all the issues that arise are settled informally.
Yeah, I think mediation is just a great, great
And the parties
tool.
And the FGO plays that role and spends a lot of time talking to people, getting them together in groups, maybe doing shuttle diplomacy, a la Henry Kissinger, right, back and forth, you know, in terms of people with issues and so on. And if one looks at the record, which are in the FGB annual reports, it shows that in the formal hearings, the unit administrators overwhelmingly win their position, that the grievance doesn't have merit. While if you go to the informal resolution, it's a bit more muddy to figure out whether people have won or not, mm-hmm. because you never get everything you want, but you get a reasonable chunk of it. The grievant does a lot better in that situation.
Interesting.
Yeah. And we there's records that go back from 1972 to the present. We've looked at all of them.
Wow.
So there's a long period of time. So that's sort of interesting. Okay, well, number eight is a related question of what we're doing. We are doing a comparative study and review of what the other Big Ten, the now academic Big Ten Academic Alliance, the so-called Big Ten, that are now the Big 15, have done, and we're collecting information. We have a few reluctant dragons that don't respond to our surveys, and we're chasing. But we want to do an analysis of what they're doing, and we may propose to the administration of the Big Ten Academic Alliance whether they would like us to do some work of actually going and talking to people. But I know Bob Noto commented very irregularly from time to time in the UGC group for the Big Ten Academic Alliance, these issues would come up, but there was not much interaction.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to add on eight. I just have no experience with, have not attended, and I have not consulted with any of those representatives really on faculty grievance procedures.
So, the last one is, anything else you'd like to comment
Not
on?
Not really. I think we've covered it. We've covered it.
Good. We have done a draft. We gave a presentation at the LIRA group, which is Labor and Employment Relations mm-hmm. Association group, last June. We're now in the process of editing and elaborating it a bit more. We're talking with the MSU Press whether they have like a little monograph done on the experience of this procedure, because we spent a lot of time looking at records. We've interviewed every living president, every living provost, and every living FGO who's still around in terms of getting commentary. We've looked at records which are gained in the annual surveys that are done of the participants in the process in terms of their comments on it. We're about to send out another survey to administrators who are very reluctant to comment for some reason or other as part of that other procedure, which is everyone that participates can provide commentary, and we'll see what we can do. The other issue that you may not be interested in, we've produced a little uncertainty about, you know, what we're up to and what our bona fides are and so on. We were interested in asking the question, if you look at this is informal hearings, the recommendations of the panel, and how does the administrator respond to them? And to be able to do that, we've got to look at the grievance, the actual grievance cases.
Sure.
And the rule there is those are confidential matters.
Yeah, I think I was actually asked about that, but I can't. Yeah. That is one thing I think Chico did ask me about.
Yeah. So we raised, first of all, with the archives, it said, well, that those materials are the responsibilities of the FGO office, so we can't issue a judgment. But they're very reluctant to provide access to the information.
I know they are. Yeah.
So I talked to Terry. And Terry said, well, what you need to do is write me a memo. I think both you and John have reasonable reputations, but you've got to indicate on which basis you're going to proceed. So we described that we want to do this comparison. And we said that we would look at the records, but we would not identify the names of the respondents.
I think that's the way
or the complainants.
Sure.
We would not mention the unit in which the grievance appeared, nor what the substance of it was. The interesting outcome, because the other issue is that the FGO office, following the HR records retention, when the person leaves the university after 6 years, the records are destroyed.
Yes.
For an archival historian, that's sort of
upsetting.
Upsetting. That all these records are sort of destroyed. But they still have a good array of stuff, and we've looked at them. The interesting thing that emerges is the president on appeal and the provost on the initial recommendation agree much more, not wholly, but agree with the recommendations of the panel, which largely, and this was the point I was making earlier, fine for the respondent and not the grievant, which is very interesting. Because the perspective, if you talk generally, they would say, well, these folks are just faculty advocates, and whatever the faculty wants, they're going to agree with them.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah, so it's interesting to be able to gather that information. I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for doing all this work. I think it's a great project.
Yeah. If you're interested, we could ship you a copy of the version of the paper that was produced last spring.
I'd love it. Yeah.
Okay. So I'll make a note to get John to send that.
Thank you.
And we will, but we are, the other issue which I would call your attention to, and let me just mention one thing, I don't want to stretch this out. In the paper, there's an appendix, several appendices, but one makes recommendations for changes in the procedure. So you might want to look at that and see
Definitely.
If it makes sense.
Yeah.
In terms of arrangement. One of the items that's emerged, because we've talked to some degree, the chairs of the University Committee on Faculty Affairs, and then chairs of the Personnel Policy Subcommittee. And, you know, there's a triad of three offices, the FGO, the UCFA, and the Provost's Office, and they work pretty well together over a number of years. But the folks that serve on UCFA serve two-year terms, and then they can serve another 2 years, and most people serve 2 years, and they've done their stint, mm-hmm. and they're out. And there's not a lot of institutional memory.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we were suggesting is that we might work, as there is the case for those people who want to file a grievance, a user's manual. We would do a manual and a collection of materials that the UCFA and the FGO could put together and provide some commentary in the year. Because I remember folks saying, well, we used to do surveys of the FGO. Does anyone have a copy of this? And so people would scratch around, and they weren't on the committee when the last major review was done. So that would be one of the items that we would suggest.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. The other issue is the tradition has been that FGOs serve in a capacity in the particular role, but they have to be associate professors and above appointed at Michigan State University.
Right.
And if you look at the pattern of FGOs, you have a beginning period that runs up to the late 1980s, in which people serve for a year or two and then moved on. So there were a whole bunch of people. Then from 1989 to 2011, Mike Rubner and John Rivette were FGOs for the whole period. And then after 2011, you again have
Short terms.
Short term. So the question is there some merit of thinking about perhaps doing what's been done now with the ombudsman's role, which essentially is to recruit, they recruited someone inside, but someone who came as an executive manager who would be on a contract and would be reviewed every 5 years and would have knowledge and experience both as a mediator and a dispute resolver, but also a sense of university practices and procedures. Whether that would be...
You could make a lot of good arguments for that.
Then, so that was one of the questions. John and I disagree on that.
Yeah, well, I get it from both sides, right? You mean you want someone from the faculty to serve in this role for a variety of reasons, but I also think somebody like an executive manager could bring a lot of good to this role as well. So
So that's one of the...
That'll be a hard sell, probably.
That's one of the... And the other counter-argument is that since, you know, two-thirds are in that order of magnitude are resolved informally, you really don't need someone that, you know, manages procedures and hearings and so on.
Yeah.
So there we are. Again, I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good. Great.